Greetings, 7 Second Delay fans. Tonight, the second of six parts of 7 Second Delay listeners interviewing Andy Breckman and myself, Ken Friedman. This is while Andy is on location in Toronto, Canada, not quite overseeing the photography of the upcoming Monk movie. More like stalking the set where the Monk movie is being shot. Tonight we have three interviews, one from listener Grant, one from listener Celeste, and part one of the interview that listener Nadia did, and we'll hear part two next week. It's a jam-packed episode, so we need to get started right away. Here is Grant from California interviewing Andy and myself about puppetry, among other things.
Well, Ken and Andy, thank you for doing this. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Grant.
Thank you, Grant. Hey, Grant, quick question. Question. Hardly worth mentioning. What show are you referring to?
Well, the name of this show is called Under the Puppet, and it is a podcast I do where I talk to puppetry professionals about the world of puppetry and the business of puppetry. So you two are perfect to be on this show.
Yes, we are.
We're flattered. And how long have you been doing this podcast?
This is the seventh year, I think, of doing this.
Wow, fantastic. Okay. So, are there any other, what's your competition? Are there other puppet podcasts?
There actually are other puppet podcasts.
Those bastards, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Those posers.
We all get along. It's a big, lovable puppet world.
Are there separate podcasts for different kinds of puppets, like marionettes and shadow puppets and, you know, Jim Henson-style Muppets and things like that?
No, I mean, no, I don't think there is. I think everybody just tries to – puppetry is such a small community. We just try to
– Yeah.
So you know, Grant, I do have a follow-up question myself.
Yes.
Do you really all get along? Do you really all get along?
We do.
That's I was wondering the same thing. Like, you allow the marionette puppeteers to attend the same meetings as
you know who usually gets the backlash is the ventriloquist. That's a lot of people don't even consider it puppetry, but I do because they're using a puppet. But
don't get me started on whether ventriloquists are puppets. We could do like five or six episodes right there.
But I've done on my show, I've interviewed Mallory Lewis, the daughter of Sherry Lewis, and I've interviewed Willie Tyler from Willie Tyler.
Did Mallory Lewis inherit lamb chops?
She did, yes. She didn't want to, but she did.
Yeah, she didn't want to, right.
I was kind of raised on lamb chop.
I wonder how long Mallory resisted that. how could she go out on stage without lamb chops? You can't.
Well, and supposedly lamb chop is built for very small hands, and she had the same hand size as her mom.
Was her mom Sherry Lewis? Was that also Kukla, Fran, and Ollie?
No, that was Fran Allison.
Okay.
Did you say that you were raised by lamb chop?
Yes.
That would explain a lot.
I have vivid memories of lamb chop from my very young childhood.
Well, that's one of the questions that I ask on the show. What was your first exposure to puppetry? So was it for Ken, for you, was it lamb chop?
Yeah, it probably was lamb chop. Because I remember that from a house that we moved out of when I think I was 4 or 5 years old.
For me, I guess it would be when I was in, I guess, first grade, the school therapist used a puppet and asked me. It was a puppet that had human anatomy, you know, perfect, and asked me to point to various parts of the puppet to explain an incident that occurred. So that was my first puppet.
Yeah, I believe later research proved that that incident never actually occurred, and you just made up the whole thing and ruined several people's lives.
Yeah, then they looked at the calendar, and it was April 1st, and everybody laughed. Everybody laughed.
That was a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one, yeah.
Now you have 7 Second Delay as a stunt radio show, as you called it, and you have actually, one of the stunts was, Andy, you were a puppet during one episode of the show.
I think you got a big assist on that show, if I recall. But I did have a puppet.
Yeah, that was at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
Right. I had a puppet made of myself, one of the great honors of my life. And I still have that puppet. I do have an interesting problem. I have five kids. And the question is, who will inherit the daddy puppet when I pass?
Have you used it at all since that show? Do you go around the house and tell
them? I use it to discipline my children. But I can't go into detail for that.
None of them will want the puppet.
Yeah, none of them will.
Am I in the running for the inheritance on the puppet at all?
If you'd like to put your name in the hat.
I would. Yes, I would.
We're going to pick slips of paper out of a hat.
Okay.
I was going to leave you the hat itself.
No, I want to be in the running for the puppet, because that's actually a very memorable show when you were a puppet. What happened, Grant, was one of the members of Jim Henson's company actually made the puppet and then controlled the puppet on stage.
I remembered it as Grant helped to design the puppet.
No.
Well, I think I put you in touch with Tim Lagasse, built the puppet. Yeah.
Well, in baseball, that would be labeled an assist.
Yeah. And what happened was I was sitting on stage at the theater with the puppet, and Tim was behind the couch controlling the puppet. Andy could not be seen by the audience. Andy was in the sound booth. And whatever Andy said, the puppet had to just purely spontaneously, you know, come up with the right facial and body language to convey it. And after about 15 minutes, I felt like I was on stage with a real live puppet. It really was strange. He was so accomplished at it. Everything was perfectly in sync with what Andy was saying from the sound booth.
Although a lot of the audience got tired of Ken saying, do the masturbation bit again. So I do have that experience with a puppet. I had a puppet avatar. Is that maybe a clean way to put it? Avatar that was on stage for an hour.
Also, also known as a puppet.
That's true. You're right. You don't have to explain it further.
Yeah.
That's true. Hey, Grant, is the puppet community, are they fans of the movie Negan and those kind of horror puppet movies?
Yeah, you know, I just interviewed a couple episodes ago the puppeteer. He's a New Zealand puppeteer, Paul Lewis, and he puppeteered that, you know, whenever it wasn't the girl in the sort of little suit walking around. But he said that movie, when they made it, they didn't want to spend any money on removing him at all or any rods from the show. So anytime you see Megan, he's there hiding behind Megan, just not being seen. So he said it was quite a challenge.
Oh, I can imagine. Would you say that was the best puppet? Tell me the best puppet movie. Are you a fan of the movie Magic, written by William Goldman?
I don't think I've seen it.
That's a ventriloquist horror movie.
Well, the best puppet movie is Team America.
I've interviewed a lot of people who've worked on Team America.
By the South Park guys.
You're absolutely right. Also, Chucky, I guess, is well known, the Chucky series.
I used to have to stand in front of the TV when I showed my kids Team America when they were little. I would stand in front of the TV during the puppet sex scenes.
But it was all negated because Ken himself was naked at the time.
I've been to the show long enough. I knew that.
What good did that do, Ken?
At least they didn't get to see puppets doing it.
At least they didn't get to see a strange, unfamiliar penis.
Yeah. Well, a puppet penis, really.
Yeah, puppet penis.
Yeah.
Well, not puppetry related, but sort of in a tangential way. Andy, you worked with Lisa Henson earlier in your career, didn't you?
She was actually a big part of my early career. She was at Warner Brothers as an executive, and she was a champion of an early script that I wrote, or maybe a couple of scripts. And thanks to her, I got an overall deal at Warner Brothers that it showed their faith, their misplaced faith in me. But I also, I don't know if it was thanks to her or not, but I did spend one day with Jim Henson.
Wow.
I got to do that, which I know maybe some of a lot of your listeners would be envious of.
Yeah, what was that? If you can talk about it, what happened?
I would. He was planning the show, the series Muppet Baby, which I guess, was that a cartoon show?
Yeah.
Okay, so he was planning, the Henson Productions was planning Muppet Babies. And what these guys do is they pay comedy writers to come in, and it was me and four or five other comedy writers, to pay comedy writers to sit around a big table, and they paid us, I don't remember what they paid us, but we signed away all our rights. We waived any rights to any ideas that we generated. And then we spent the day sitting around in a big conference room with Jim Henson at the end of the table, just generating ideas, just kicking around, brainstorming ideas. And I guess it was either Jim Henson or some assistant was taking notes. And we were kicking around ideas for what elements of Muppet Babies might work. And I don't remember, my memory, as Ken can tell you, and listeners of my show know, is the worst. It's a sieve. How would you describe my memory, Ken?
A leaky sieve.
Yeah, it's not even a well-constructed sieve.
Yeah.
It's a faulty sieve that you get. And I wish I had anecdotes to tell you, although I do remember making Jim Henson laugh was a very sweet and a delightful moment for me, but I don't remember the specifics, and I don't remember if I contributed anything to Muppet Baby. But I know it's enough to make you, Grant, very jealous of me.
Well, in the final Muppet Baby movie, did the Cookie Monster have a free candy van?
No. It was so no.
So then that was cut.
That was rejected out of hand.
Yeah.
I pitched a whole sequence where the Cookie Monster was shopping for a van that had to be soundproof.
Right.
The soundproof van.
Like the inside of his garbage can or the Grouch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's mixing up so many characters. It's hilarious.
Yeah, that's right. So that I had that day, but I don't remember any. It drives my wife insane because when somebody famous is mentioned in conversation, I can say, oh, I spent the day with him, or I spent a week with him. And then my wife will say, well, what was they like? And I absolutely have no memory of it. So if I was writing my memoirs, it would be just like 8 pages of just the worst kind of introductions to people.
Well, let me ask this. You brought up pitching, and I have heard mixed things about pitching and pitch. I know maybe you necessarily haven't pitched a puppet show, but if you were pitching a puppet show, would you bring the puppets into the pitch? Because I've heard things like, don't even think about bringing them in the room. Or then I've also heard people say, yes, definitely bring the puppets in.
Oh, I would bring the puppets into the room. I would do it. It's a full multimedia. But I would keep it short. And, you know, I'm pretty good at pitching. But I've often brought in props and photos, and I've had my assistant put together montages to illustrate a point. I would not only bring the puppets in, I would spend a little time and a little money doing a proof of concept video. I would actually do 2 or 3 minutes of a very crude representation of what you hope to be doing. You know, unless you're the South Park guys, if you're going in cold, you really have to knock them dead. I have some friends. I have a couple of good friends, Tom Gannell and Max Frost, who created a marionette puppet show called Red Pepper. They actually went to pilot. This is in 1980, mid-80s, 84, 85. And they were offered a writing job on the original Simpsons before the Simpsons premiered. They could have been on the original staff, but they instead chose to decline that offer and commit themselves to this puppet show, this puppet pilot that they made, I think, for NBC. So that's a decision they regret for the rest of their life. But they would be great guests because I'm sure they'd proudly show you their failed pilot that they're very deservedly very proud of.
Did it ever air?
No. It was a busted, what they call a busted pilot.
Aww.
But it was a very crude Howdy Doody style marionette living among real people. The way Mork the alien lived, you know, in the real world.
Huh.
Or not Mork. I'm sorry. Mork is good, but Alf, I guess, is a better example.
I was in the Burbank airport one day, and I had a sweater on that said Puppeteer on this. You know, it was a crew gift. And this guy comes up to me and goes, "Are you Puppeteer?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "I worked on Alf, the whole series." And I said, "Wow, that's really great." And he goes, "No, it was responsible for my cocaine habit." He goes, "So whenever I see a puppeteer, I go, no, thank you. I don't want to work on a puppet thing."
Now, would you consider John Malkovich a classic puppet movie?
Yeah. We interviewed the marionette. Philip Huber is the guy who did all, he got a marionette to do a somersault, which had never been done before for that film. But yeah.
Yeah, you have to do it almost at gunpoint. You have to threaten the marionette.
You mean Being John Malkovich? You're talking about that movie?
Yeah.
Well, I have one more question here as we wrap up. You two have worked as a creative team for 30 years on this show, 7 Second Delay. What's the secret to maintaining a creative partnership for that long?
Ah, that's a good question.
It is. It is a good question. I know my answer, but I'm very curious about what Ken would say.
I think Andy and I share certain key values that have made it a lot of fun to keep collaborating after all these years. I mean, for one thing, I think we're very, very different, which has been a real asset because it has meant that we don't really get bored with each other. It's hard to predict one another. Andy and I both really love coming up with ideas simply that nobody has ever attempted before on the radio. I think our motives might be slightly different for doing that. Mine are kind of more, I'm just always up for a good experiment to find out what will happen. And I guess Andy is, thinking similar things, but more comedically, I guess. But I think the fact that we're both really into trying things, knowing full well that there's a great chance it might fail, has been a big part of the collaboration for so many decades.
Well, that's a complete crutch.
And how would you answer the question, Andy?
Well, if I'm going to be honest, I'm from the very beginning, I've been sexually attracted to the man. It's a great question. I think I once heard that Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon, who, how long were they together? Close to 30 years. I heard they never socialized with each other. They only kind of hung out on the show itself, you know, on the couch itself. And that might be part of the secret that we don't. I mean, I occasionally will meet Ken for dinner and we'll go out together. But, you know, it's 1 hour a week together, which is the secret to most of my relationships. Just minimize the exposure. And a lot of what Ken said is absolutely true. I it rings true for me. But in addition to that, I so appreciate that Ken offers me and all the disc jockeys on FMU a safe space. I mean, Ken is a First Amendment purist, and I get to say very stupid things without fear of being called on it or canceled. And it's for me like therapy. So, you know, it's like instead of going to a therapist every week, I get to go to FMU. So that would be my answer.
There was that period of time. It was very brief. There was like a 6-month period of time there where you actually were worried about getting canceled because you had a new show coming. You had a new show that was in production, and it was sort of at the height of the Me Too era.
And then I remembered that nobody is listening, which was a great relief.
Well, I love too, Ken. What you said is that you do these shows knowing that it might fail, and it probably, you know what I mean. Like that's just a great attitude to create stuff because then what, you know, what can go wrong? Like, you know,
well, the stakes are so damn low. That's the other thing. They, you know, no, there's no consequence to our shows failing.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think? Now, before we go, Grant, what do you think attract? What type of person is attracted to puppeteering? What personality characteristics? Is it? Are they failed comedians? Are they people that are failed that have failed socially and can't connect with other real human beings?
What manner of failure are you, Grant?
what do they we assume that they're failures. What do they have in common with each other?
You know what I think honestly is, and I can't speak for all puppeteers, but it's the whole idea of like a, what is it, introverted extrovert? You know what I mean? Like somebody who...
Oh, a shy egomaniac. This,
yeah, a shy egomaniac. For, you know, because it's a lot of puppeteers will you know, do anything with the puppet in front of the camera. But then once you turn the camera on them, they're like, oh, no, no, thank you. Just keep it on the puppet, you know, and you can kind of say anything with the puppet.
Does that describe you as well?
For some, yeah. I was doing acting first, and I just kind of was, puppet was like a side thing, like a hobby. I never really thought like, oh, wait, I could do this as a living. And then just started, you know, developing my own shows with a puppet, and then got noticed by someone at the Jim Henson Company to come in and start training there. And now it's like, oh, yeah, this is my thing. It took forever to find it, but this is the thing, you know.
Are most puppeteers men?
It is getting, in the beginning, I think it was, but it's getting much, 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 much better. So
you mean there are even more men when you say getting better?
Yes, there's so many men.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
You mean,
no.
So there's fewer and fewer women is what you mean.
No. There's,
you meant there are more women. Oh,
there's more women now. Yes.
Oh, I thought you said it was getting better.
No, it's
okay. And you know, I actually do a ventriloquism act when I occasionally will find myself doing stand up, and my stand up ends with my famous ventriloquism act.
It is really uncanny. Have you ever seen it, Grant?
I may have heard it, like if you did it on some live show or something. But
oh well, if you've heard it, it's nowhere near as magical as when you see it.
Yeah.
Because again, it's just like the puppet. The puppet has a life of its own, and you can't.
Well, that's true. The puppet does have a life.
You can't see Andy's lips. Andy's lips don't appear to be moving at all. It's really amazing.
Well, I'm a little. Oh, Ken, you're being very generous. I'm a little bit out of practice, but I don't know how I could ever do it for Grant. But maybe the next, if we're ever invited back, I would be honored to share my ventriloquism act with.
I'll book an Under the Puppet live show, and you'll be the headliner. You can come in and
if you do a puppet live show, that would be amazing. Do you do that sometimes? I mean,
there's puppet slams everywhere in every city in the world. They have puppet slams, and it's just, you know, it's like a poetry slam. It's just somebody comes up with a under 5 minute long puppet act, and they do it. And you see everything. You see every kind of puppet act in the thing. But
wow.
Yeah, I've always wanted to book a show like that.
That sounds great.
Well, you know, Ken has a theater outside of New York, in Jersey City.
Yeah, I'd love to do a puppet slam.
Oh, I can get you in touch with people for sure.
Okay,
but man, would that be enough to get you on a plane to come out to New York?
Absolutely. I was going to try and I had already travel booked when you had the Andy Mation Festival, or else I would have come out for it. So,
oh my God! Thanks for contributing to that too. That was
yeah. And Grant also did a director's commentary for the DVD, Andy.
Oh my gosh, Grant, that's above and beyond. But Grant, if you would help organize a puppet slam at Monty Hall in Jersey City, we would be, I'm speaking for Ken now without even consulting him, we'd be honored. and I would do my ventriloquism act, and I would get Ken to do something or other.
Absolutely. We can do it. There's so many puppets. There's so much puppet stuff in New York that it's, you know.
What a night that would be. What a great night.
You would see some amazing stuff.
And Would they need a specially designed stage or anything, or would it?
No, most puppet slams are just on a normal stage, normal audience. Yeah, I mean, you know, like sometimes, depending on the act, they might, oh, we need a black light or we need a spotlight zoomed in right here. But then if somebody needs something really technical you don't have, we just say thank you, you know, and pick people who can do the act, you know.
Well, Grant, we should be in touch about it. I actually would really love to do that.
Sure, let's do it.
But we're out of time for now. Grant, thanks for interviewing us.
Well, no, Grant should be thanking us. It's his podcast too.
Yes.
So well, Ken and Andy, thank you so much for being here on Under the Puppet today. I appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I can't speak for Ken.
No, my pleasure more than your pleasure. I think I was pleasured more than you were.
That's true. I enjoyed it, but Ken enjoyed it more.
Yeah.
That was my sense.
All right. Thanks a lot, Grant.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
good
Andy.
To see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was listener Grant in California interviewing Andy and myself for his podcast, Under the Puppet, which you can download from your favorite podcast provider. And the great news is that Grant and I are indeed working on a puppet slam, hopefully coming up later this year at Monty Hall. We have two more listener interviews to air tonight while Andy is out of town. This next one is from listener Celeste in Alabama.
I can hear y'all just fine. Am I coming through okay?
Yeah, you're coming through loud and clear. And Andy's also on the line with us.
Hi, Celeste. Very nice.
Yay.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure. I am a little frightened, but still well, very honored to be.
I hope in 20 minutes you still feel that it's your pleasure. I hope you don't think.
I think I'll be okay.
Where are you joining us from today?
I am in Alabama.
Perfect.
I like to call it Bama.
Then I'm going to call it Bama also. My wife is a Southern girl. I married a Southern girl. She's from Memphis.
Oh, my. I am so sorry for her.
Yeah, I am. I am too. You know what I say to my wife sometimes? I say, thank you for marrying me. I'm sorry for marrying you.
Aw. Well, you know, she's lovely because I've heard her on y'all's show, and she knows how to give it right back to you. That's for sure.
Well, the woman you hear on the show is an actress that we hired.
Her name is
Gwen Spinley. She's very talented.
She does a
pretty good Beth too, I have to say.
She does a great Beth. I mean, we auditioned, we cast a pretty wide net. We auditioned hundreds of women.
I have learned. Go ahead.
I was going to ask Andy why he didn't want his real wife, Beth, calling into the show.
You know what? Now that you said that, Ken, that might not be a terrible idea. That's not a bad idea.
He should at least give it a shot.
He should at least be able to audition.
Yeah.
It would save us some money.
I think so.
Yeah. But you're the real thing, I can tell.
Well, Celeste, what did you want to talk to us about or ask us today?
Well, I'd like to start asking the question I have for Ken. So I happened to catch your State of the Station. Is that what you call it?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I happened to catch that, and I was just blown away with all the moving parts that you have to wrangle to get your radio station producing content. And I was left actually wondering what it is that you do in the preservation of your content. I work in a library, and we create and upload online deliverables of archival materials to our digital asset management software, which is a super fancy way of saying we digitize stuff, we scan it, and we put it online.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering if your radio station is born digital, and if so, what is it that you do to preserve it?
Well, we record.
Should I answer this?
Sure. Yeah, Andy, why don't you take a shot at answering this?
Well, Celeste, first off, excellent question.
Thank you.
Let me start by saying that we've done a lot of interviews so far for this show, and I would say that's the most intelligent question that we've had so far.
Wow.
I'd agree. I'd agree.
And I wish we had more time to go into more detail about with an answer for you, but I will acknowledge it's a fantastic question.
Well, seriously though, Celeste, yeah, we've been recording our programs, all of them, since 2001. And I think we're the only radio station in the world that actually has air checks available to the public for free going back that far. So it's been, you know, well over 20 years of archives. But then we also do amass other digital recordings of audio and video of all sorts of different things. And we do archive those, and we back up the archives. And we also use tape drives known as LTOs, which I think are really common in the movie and TV industry.
To what end? Why would WFMU even desire to save everything for 20 years? Like, who are you hoping that after the apocalypse, some researchers in the far future will want to know what our culture was like? I mean, what?
I'm ready for
aliens might land and
I mean, the station's been on the air for, you know, a very long time already, over 60 years, and we've already had people trying to go back into our archives to find certain things, you know, certain things from the 60s, for example.
Now, does this process eat up a lot of the station's budget, Ken?
No, I don't think so, especially because like the things that take up a huge amount of storage space, like videos or multi-track music sessions where a band played and we actually multi-tracked them, those get preserved on inert tape drives, LTO tape drives. So those
in the future, archaeologists, Indiana Jones type guys digging that want to dig up artifact from 2023, they would come to us, cultural artifacts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even right now in 2023, you know, if you wanted to hear what a radio station, you know, how it, you know, what did we actually air on 9/11, you can go back to 9/11 to the WFMU archive.
Who does that?
Global researchers.
Researchers, scholars, all sorts of different people might do that.
They're stupid.
but you're probably in favor of every Leave It to Beaver episode ever aired, you know, being preserved digitally, aren't you?
Well, especially the classic I Forgot My Lunch Money episode. I mean, that one, everyone would want to go back to that one.
Yeah, you're happy that all your old SNL and David Letterman episodes are all being preserved at the Library of Congress in some way.
Well, that's classic stuff.
Right.
So I understand that Ken has been to the Library of Congress. I would love to hear about that experience.
It was.
Do you want me to take that one, Ken?
Yeah, you go ahead. You weren't there with me, but I'm sure you can imagine what it was like.
Well, Ken waits and waits for, you know, once every year, the Library of Congress has a pants optional day. And and Ken waits for that day to travel down to Washington. And he just walks around. He just walks around just declaring that, hey, I'm Ken Friedman. He says out loud, does anyone have any questions for me?
Well, he's a freed man. He shouldn't wear pants.
He's a freed man. But I would like to go with you, Ken, on your next visit to the Library of Congress. What brings you down there, Ken?
Ironically enough, an organization called the Radio Preservation Task Force, which is trying to preserve radio air checks for scholars and academics and historians. But anyway, the Culpeper facility at the Library of Congress is inside a mountain. It's actually the former home of the shadow government.
Inside a mountain to survive the nuclear war that's coming.
Yeah, so it's dug deep inside the Blue Hill Mountains of Virginia.
And you meet with other Ken Friedmans from around the nation, other station managers.
Well, that's not where the Ken Friedman Convention is generally held. But I do meet other radio people there at the Library of Congress, and they just have every type of player for any kind of media that has ever existed, every kind of audio player, every kind of television, every kind of film projector. And most of what they have there is not digitized at all. Most of it is just in huge plastic tubs, and it's marked what it is. So I couldn't believe how much material there was sitting in there, you know, just on cassettes and reel-to-reels and film and all these analog formats. And they can't possibly digitize it all. They digitize stuff upon request.
Are they racing the clock, Ken? Because aren't all these cassettes, aren't they disintegrating as every year goes by?
A lot of stuff is disintegrating, but actually cassettes and reel-to-reel tape don't disintegrate as fast as some other things. But yeah, they are racing the clock on a lot of stuff.
Well, that's why I talk so loudly when I'm on the air.
Yeah.
So my voice will last longer on tape and it won't disintegrate as quickly.
Yeah, and it'll also be louder as it travels through space, through the galaxy. Andy Breckman shouting.
Is our stuff being all broadcast through the galaxy? I guess everything is, right?
Yeah, to a certain extent.
Well, why don't we ever do a show directed toward our alien masters?
I'm up for that.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah. I would ask for mercy for myself and my family and for you, Ken.
How would you ask?
What about me?
And Celeste, for the three of us.
Thank you. Thank you.
And our families. And I would also offer to be a mole for them, to narc for them.
That's very smart.
Because a lot of DJs, for example, would work to subvert their rule.
Right.
But I could work behind the scenes.
Very clever.
Yeah.
That's a good plan.
Like when Elvis volunteered to be a drug enforcement agent to Nixon.
Exactly. You and I can work for the alien overlords. Yeah.
Are you going to try to communicate with them in English or?
I don't know. I think, what do they speak?
French. Latin? Probably French.
French, probably French.
Yeah.
It's the romance. Oh, it's the language of love.
I'm in trouble.
I think it's the language of aliens.
Celeste, is this something you're interested in? Is extraterrestrial life and UFOs?
Actually, I remember as a child being terrified at the prospect, but I kind of got over it.
So Celeste, it's now.
I don't think about it very much.
I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. So you're in Bama. That's what we call it. And you work for this. You're affiliated with the university. Is that correct?
I am. Yes, indeed.
Excellent. And how long have you held that position?
Next year will be 15 years.
Okay. So that.
And I've seen some pretty amazing stuff actually in our special collections library. It's really a fun job to have.
It sounds great. Now, what kind of stuff like has excited you the most?
Well. We currently are focusing on African American lives, and there's been some real heartbreak in that collection. But it also is very heartwarming for me because African Americans are so underserved when it comes to our history that it really inspires my work. Actually,
you're doing what you can to preserve their story.
Correct.
Are you dealing with oral?
And some of the stories are heartbreaking.
Are you dealing with audio recordings or the written word, or what kind of stuff are you preserving?
Well, most of it is like diaries and letters and broadsides, maps. So most of it's visual. We do have some audio. I haven't really worked with audio very much. I just know that it's really complicated and difficult to work with. And that's what has impressed me so with WFMU's archive is that I know how difficult it is. And so y'all just knock the socks off of me, basically, with your audio.
Maybe you should interview Ken. You know, the Friedman family owned slaves until 1956.
Not so.
When they freed the last slaves.
Not so at all. It's quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite. What is the opposite?
My family fled the Nazis. If you want to know what really happened to my family.
Oh, I was misinformed.
Okay.
Must have been a typo. It's a typo in your official biography. Now, Celeste, you are have you ever met anyone in your community, Celeste? Anyone else who listens to WFMU?
Well, actually, you know, I have been selling y'all station super hard lately, and I actually have a really funny story. So I have just been engaging with strangers lately because I just have been super silly these days. And I was at the grocery store, and there were two young men in the same aisle as me, and the one facing me was wearing what looked like a Wonder Woman pajama top. And the one whose back was to me had a T-shirt that said Guaranteed Tough on the back. And so when I got close to them, I said to the one who had his back turned to me, hey, I'm curious to know who guarantees your toughness. And we all just started laughing and having a high old time in the grocery store aisle because his friend was like, yeah, you know, I didn't know you were tough at all. So I, too, would like to know what guarantees your toughness. And I just happened to be wearing Ken's ass-kicking T-shirt that I recently bought in March. And I'm like, well, look at me. I'm wearing a shirt that's way cooler than me. And before I knew it, all three of us were on our phones with WFMU.org.
There you go.
And I'm like, oh, wow.
So you're well. That's
so we should be getting some new listeners.
Strangers are the best.
I also have a bumper sticker on my car.
Now, Ken, do you still offer?
What's that?
Strangers are the best. What are you saying, Andy?
Are you still offering $400 for every listener that you get to tune into WFMU?
No.
A finder's fee?
No, we don't.
I'm
we
doing
never
it for free.
We never
I love y'all.
We never had that finder's fee, Andy.
Well, you know, Celeste, there is a risk of talking to strangers and asking them about the T-shirt they're wearing. It might not always go as well as that encounter. You got to be careful.
I find that if I approach people with a big smile on my face, it turns out just fine.
And the graveyard's full of people that thought that. You got to be very careful.
Well, you know, that brings up what I was going to interview you about, actually, because I only just learned about your Ish Happens game that is on sale at Target and Walmart and other places. But I only just recently learned that you've disbanded Uncle Andy's Toys.
Well, I get.
And I just go ahead.
Well, I didn't officially close the company, but it was a passion project, a little sideline for 4 or 5 years. But it ran out of steam.
Aw.
But he did. He
well,
did pretty darn well.
I was super impressed with the website
that I found. Well, that means a lot to me, Celeste. No, I had a great 4 or 5 years, and I had 8 or 9 toys that we licensed in that time, and
uh-huh.
7 of them failed horribly, but one of them was a medium success, and one of them was a pretty substantial success. So that's not a terrible.
Which one was the best seller?
Well, that game you referenced, the Stuff Happens game.
Okay.
Yeah, and then that game got licensed to a TV show.
It became a game show on TBS for a few seasons. So it had a nice, healthy run as far as those things go, and it was a success enough to make me sort of a superstar, a rock star around WFMU. They don't see successful people.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, there were a couple of years there where everybody wanted to be a toy maker.
Yeah, well, that might be.
It was incredible.
That might be true, but
people were whittling little Pinocchio dolls.
Yeah, people were. Oh, that's right. A lot of staff were sitting around whittling Pinocchio dolls.
They wanted to be like you, Andy.
Everyone does.
Your marathon pledge money at work.
Well, Celeste, we are running out of time. Do you have any final questions?
I don't actually, but I do have to say I love the show, and I am going to be enjoying those archives for a very long time.
Oh, thanks so much, Celeste. It's been really nice talking to you today.
Yeah, very nice meeting
it's
you.
It's been thank lovely.
Thank you for listening. It means the world to us, doesn't it, Ken?
It does.
And we're being sincere.
Well, I am being sincere.
At least one of us is being totally sincere.
Why don't you try being sincere right now, Andy? Just try being.
I break out to, honestly, I was sincere. I tried it last year for a while.
Yeah.
And I break out in hives.
Oh.
I was kind of allergic.
Jeez.
I have an allergic reaction.
It's hard to believe.
Well, you please tell Beth that I am blessing her heart, and she's going to laugh.
She will. She will. You are definitely a kindred spirit to my wife. But she will she will laugh. I feel like I'm talking to one of her cousins.
Well, I could be, I guess.
Yeah, I probably could be. Very sweet to meet you. Very nice. Thank you for listening.
All right. Thanks a lot, Celeste. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Celeste from Alabama interviewing Andy and myself. As our series of listener interviews continues while Andy is out of town, we have one more to air, one more for you tonight. And this is well-known listener Nadia. And this is part 1 of 2. We're going to hear the first 15 minutes or so now, and then the rest of it next week. Hi, Nadia.
Hi.
So Andy has to run off for a meeting. So we should just jump right in. So Nadia, why don't you tell us what you wanted to interview us for. I think a lot of listeners already know you from hearing you so much on the radio.
Hi, Nadia.
Hi.
Oh, it's so nice to see you on Zoom. Did you have a good day at school?
Well, I didn't go to school, but yes. I guess if I didn't go to school, that's a nice day at school, yeah.
Wait, how come you got to skip school today?
I don't know.
Oh, what a lucky kid.
Wow, the best kind of day off from school, the mystery day.
Yes.
And then, Nadia, is that your bedroom that we're looking at?
No, this is the office.
Oh, very cool. That's where your parents, that's where your dad or mom sometimes work?
Yeah, and then I got my computer. Oh, well, I think I know why I wasn't at school now because I was kind of sick, but now I think I'm fine.
Oh, good. Are you feeling better?
Yes.
Now, Nadia, look me right in the camera and say, I was really feeling sick. Say it. Let me see you say it.
I was really feeling sick?
That sounded believable to me.
She had a big grin on her face. I don't know. If I was in the jury, I don't know what I would think, Nadia.
Okay.
Good thing you're not in the jury, Andy.
Okay, now wait. Now she's going to try it again. Go ahead. Try it again.
No. Okay. I want to start now, but I just wanted to ask before, is there any question I can't ask?
No, I don't think so.
You can ask us anything.
Okay.
Can I ask you anything?
I mean, at the end, yes.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, first question. Would you rather be interviewed by me, by Dingo, or by a Dingo?
By you. No question about it.
Are you saying Dingo, like the animal, like the little wolf?
Yeah,
animal?
The wild.
Yeah, the wolf or Dingo. Like
the wild dogs. Yeah, wild dogs.
Oh, the wild dogs that are found in Australia?
Yeah, that eat Meryl Streep's babies.
They hate Meryl Streep. I know that much about Dingoes.
They love her babies.
They love her babies. They're not fans of her movies. So you're saying, would I rather be interviewed by you or a Dingo?
Or Dingo.
Or Dingo. Is that a character from a movie?
It's from Mickey Mouse's Clubhouse.
Oh, there's a character. Okay, so those are my three choices.
You're like a dog.
So the three choices are you, a wild dog from Australia, or a character from Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
The answer is clear, Andy. What do you even have to think about? Nadia. Nadia's the runaway favorite.
I'm going to say, Nadia, you are my first choice. But unlike Ken, I would not call you the runaway favorite. I think it's a very close call.
Okay, so just before we start, I wanted to say that there's 43 questions and a game.
Okay, better get going then. Let's go to question number two.
Okay, so where did you guys meet?
We've actually told this story many times to our other interviewers, but because you're one of our regular callers and we like you so much, we're going to tell you the real story of how we met.
I was looking to adopt a dingo, and I went to Australia, and Ken had a dingo ranch there at that time. This is before he got interested in radio.
I didn't own it, but I was working
right,
there.
He was managing the ranch, and Ken sold me the most wonderful, wonderful dingo, and we became friends ever since.
No, because... Wait, when did you meet?
What year was it?
Yeah, because you're in Australia, it's a day after, so...
You're right. I mean, that's right. It was a different time zone. You're right. I left to go pick up my dingo on a Wednesday.
Why did you want a dingo?
May 2nd. Why did I want a dingo? Because
they eat humans or something.
Only Meryl Streep.
Did you even know what a dingo was? Did you not know what a dingo was?
Well, I lived 3.5 blocks from Meryl Streep, and I was having like a little feud with her and her family. And I wanted to teach her a lesson that she'll never forget.
Yeah. Andy felt that Meryl Streep and her family and her domestic help, they made too much noise putting the garbage out at night.
Okay.
So I thought a dingo would shut them up.
Well, that's a good choice, actually. Dingoes are like little thugs. You know, they...
Well, her family, from what I understood, and I should have read the whole article, but from what I understood, Meryl Streep has a history with dingoes. that goes
for
back
real,
a number
for
of
real
years.
Though, for real though, where did you guys like?
Well, we met. Ken was at college, and he was doing a radio show, and I came to that college in Michigan to perform. I used to do a funny act, and I went to Ken's radio show so I could talk about my act.
Okay,
to get
that's
people
interesting.
To come.
Yeah,
very
yes.
interesting.
All right, question number three.
Do you guys hang out outside of WFMU, like go get a drink or something?
Yeah, a bit.
Well, Ken doesn't know this, but when he's fast asleep at 4 or 5 in the morning, I'm often in his house. I'm downstairs.
Okay.
I'm creepy crawling around.
I didn't.
So we spend more time together than Ken is aware of.
Okay, that's weird.
Yeah, that is weird. I was not aware of that.
I never thought I'd be asked that question.
Well, I'm glad you're owning up to it now.
Yeah.
Okay. Andy? This is a question for you. Do you regret getting the tattoo of Ken on your shoulder?
It's a good question. I don't see the tattoo. It's on my back. Okay. My wife, Beth, sees it more than I do. So maybe that's a good question for her. It hurt when, of course, I was getting it, but it stopped hurting pretty quickly. So I forgot about it. But maybe Beth regrets it. I've only had one person ask me about it. It was my doctor, because I went for a physical, and he could not understand.
You're like, who is that?
Well, it's my doctor, Dr. Ehrenwald, and he couldn't understand why I did it or what possessed me to do it. It baffled him. I think I told him the story, and then he made a note in his file about me.
Oh. He thinks you're crazy now.
But I should tell you, Ken has tattoos about WFMU that are much bigger than mine.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Nadia, next question.
What is your favorite 7 Second Delay episode besides this one, of course?
I think my favorite one was when we channeled the radio dial and then we stumbled across our own show on the radio dial, and it was on loop. It's a little hard to explain, but we sort of fell into this continuous loop because we were trying to imitate what we were hearing on the radio, and then unexpectedly we started hearing ourselves on the radio, but we were hearing ourselves 15 or 20 seconds late.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think, I would say a couple of things. Number one, I disagree with you, Nadia. That it was not interesting in the least. I don't recall that show. I don't recall many of our shows, but I know that many of my favorite shows recently have been shows that you called in on.
That's very nice. Very nice of you to say that, Andy.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wasn't it nice of me?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of the same topic. What is your worst 7 Second Delay episode or your least favorite one besides this one? Of course.
Well, for me, my least favorite one that we ever did would probably be the one Ken described 2 minutes ago about looping our voices on the radio. That sounds horrific.
I think my least favorite one was one that we did back in the 1990s when we had a whole bunch of Cub Scouts on the air. I think we had about 10 Cub Scouts. And it was just pandemonium and chaos. And
yeah, that sounds like chaos.
Yeah, it was.
Well, that might have been. I bet one of them was my son. It might have been my son's Cub Scout troop.
I don't think so. I don't think.
Oh, really?
It was.
We just found a troop. And oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it might have been.
That must have been absolute chaos, though.
Yeah,
it was chaos. And I know that's actually because Ken is a veteran. You know, he's been on the radio a long time, and he's kind of the boss of the station. The one thing he hates, Nadia, is chaos. He hates a lot of voices going all at once.
It's true.
And he always says that to me. He doesn't like chaos. And you know what that makes me want to do, Nadia?
What?
Make a lot of chaos in the studio.
Isn't that like what happens like when you reach the goal on the marathon? Is Ken like screaming on the floor? That's what's happening?
I think that is a chaotic moment.
Yeah.
That might be a chaotic moment that Ken is that Ken makes an exception for. That's one that he likes.
Okay, yeah, that's
true. That's a good one.
Okay.
You're doing great, okay. Nadia. What's next on your list?
Did you guys listen to the radio as a kid? And if you did, what were like your favorite radio shows?
My favorite radio show was Gene Shepherd, who was a storyteller. And he did a show five nights a week on WOR, which was an AM station in New York City. And Andy, what was your favorite show or station?
Well, my early memories were I did listen to pop music. I don't know what station it was. But when I was a teenager, I changed over to FM. That's what WFMU is on. And that's the band that the bandwidth that the cool stations were on. And I started listening to WMMR out of Philadelphia. And that influenced me a lot.
Okay.
Nadia, when I was your age, I was not as cool as you. I was not listening to cool radio stations like you do.
Like WFMU?
Yeah, like WFMU.
Apparently, when Andy was your age, though, he was mailing records to the President of the United States.
That's true. I tell that story on another interview. Oh, because it was a protest record, and I thought I could single-handedly end the war in Vietnam.
How old were you?
I must have been 13. I'm embarrassed to say 12 or 13. I had to end that war, Nadia, before I was 18 and could be drafted. I only had 5 years. I was under the gun.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Totally acting out of self-interest.
So, yeah.
So Nadia, what's next on your list of questions?
Okay. Nadia, do you really have 46 questions?
43 questions.
Are they all numbered? Are they all numbered on that page?
No.
Can I ask you, I'd like to hear question number 34 next.
Okay, fine. Hold on. Let me just count one.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that. And we will hear question number 34 from listener Nadia as we hear part two of her interview with Andy Breckman and myself, station manager Ken, next week as this series of 7 Second Delay listener interviews continues. We'll be airing 6 weeks in total of these. And then Andy comes back from Toronto, France. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Also in a coming interview, Andy will reveal which record he actually mailed to which president in his unsuccessful attempt to end the Vietnam War. Stay tuned for Weekly World Blues with Matt Fiveash, coming right up. Odds are Ken won't live to see tomorrow.
Sound of the blues scale. The blues scale is very simple, very useful, but also very simple to build. All you have to do is know your minor pentatonic scales. So in this case, I was playing A.
The blues come so many different ways until it's kind of hard to explain.
A group of young black students in Harlem just a few days ago asked me what at this point in my life was I looking for. And I said, what I've always been looking for, where resides the rebel heart? Without the rebellious heart, with about people who understand that there's no sacrifice we can make that is too great to retrieve that which we've lost, we will forever be distracted with possessions and trinkets and title. And I think one of the big things that happened was that when black people began to be anointed by the trinkets of this capitalist society and began to become big-time players and began to become heads of corporations, they became players in the game of our own demise. I think people have to be more adventurous. The heart has to find greater space for rebellion.
One of these days, and it won't be long, you're gonna call my name and I'll be gone. Fare thee well, oh honey, fare thee well. Well, you don't know, you don't know my mind. When you see me laughing, baby, it's to keep from crying. Fare thee well, oh honey, honey, fare thee well. God knows I tried, I've done my best, but I guess I'm just a rumbler like all the rest. Fare thee well, fare thee well, oh honey, honey, fare thee well. Where I'm bound, keep looking for something I ain't never found. Fare thee well, oh honey, 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 fare thee well. Thank you.